For the lore of the land, this is Celestia Leffler. On this episode of Watersheds is Commons, we'll visit an exquisitely beautiful and deeply sacred part of the world known as Dineta, or Navajo land, which extends through parts of Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico, covering an expansive 26,000 square miles. The Navajo Nation is surrounded by four sacred mountains: Blanca Peak in south-central Colorado, Mount Taylor in west-central New Mexico, the San Francisco Peaks in north-central Arizona, and Hesperus Peak in southwestern Colorado. We'll explore the lifeways of the Navajo people, the culture and traditions of whom have been threatened since their creation. The Navajos were faced with potential genocide during the mid-19th century, when Kit Carson was ordered by James Henry Carleton to round up the Navajos and remove them from their homeland. They were forced to march hundreds of miles to Bosque Redondo, and upon returning to their homeland in 1868, their population had dwindled to less than 10,000. Today, the Navajo people number over 300,000. Gibson Gani, a traditional medicine man, tells us part of the Navajo creation story.
As people talk about it from the beginning, there were sacred mountains somewhere in beneath the earth. And then there was a flood, there was something that happened. People were living there. They weren't like us, they were spirits. They were only a like figure of a human body. There were some disagreements and things were done that wasn't supposed to. Every time things go wrong, you have to make a change. There has to be a change. So because of that, the wrongdoings, men and women were separated. But somehow we had to get back together because men can't live without women, women can't live without men. So that's what was decided. So they went up. And they went up to the next world. Same thing happens. They came to this world. What they did was one of the holy ones, first man, first woman, took the tips of the mountain and then they brought it up to this surface. When they brought it up to the surface, they put it on a cloth, like a little mound of dirt. The east and the west, they look at each other. So that's how it was made, the east and the west. And then the south and the north, that's how they made them, those little mounds of dirt. And then to the east, they put white corn on it. And to the west, they put corn pollen. And to the south, they put blue flower, we call it blue corn pollen. And then to the north is, it's this glitter stone. And then after that, they took those and put it in the bundle and tied it, all four of them. And then they tied it into another bundle, which became the sacred bundle. That's what we use today, remembering our sacred mountains and remembering where we are, where prayers were said. So we have it in a bundle.
Navajo country is also bounded by four sacred rivers, the Rio Grande to the east, the Little Colorado to the south, the Colorado River to the west, and the San Juan River to the north. Master Dene Weaver and Shepherd, Roy Cady, tells us about the sacredness of water.
Tuo, it makes the sound of water. The tuo part is a slow-moving, peaceful stream in a creek. And then the more rush, forceful ones make the last part of the word. The word is sacred for water and powerful. It's a life provider. Tuo is something that we just can't do without. As we all know, what percent of the earth is made of tuo? We're disrespecting it in so many ways and contaminating it. And it could go to sleep too because of that. Or it could just get enough of us and wiped us out. It could work either way. Or we could just start respecting it again and and live with it for so many more millenniums, you know. In my community, there are several natural springs where the toll comes out in a natural form to come greet us, to remind us that, yeah, take care of me, and I can take care of you. Oftentimes you hear people say, oh yeah, you know, we want to just, you know, we haven't had adequate rainfall, we're in a drought, and, you know, we need to just all, you know, band together, and we need to pray for more. Yeah, we do, but we also need to respect it more. We can't just pray for it and disrespect it.
Al Largo is a carpenter, mechanic, and translator. Here he talks about respecting the laws of the seasons.
There are some things that you only do and only say and only tell and only practice according to the season. They say you only tell coyote stories, the myth stories, like in wintertime, because a lot of the animals and creatures, they're either hibernating or taking a nap, you know, in the wintertime. So just the humans are, you know, they can tell those stories to each other or to their kids, to their grandchildren. But when spring and summer comes, you have everything moving about, and there's a lot more things to do too. Like there's planting, there's sheep herding, there's shearing, there's lambing. You know, life is full cycle during that time. Then the rain, the thunder people, they're all out, they're all busy. But in the wintertime, there's not much going on. And the nights are longer, I think, too, where you can really focus on those kind of things. It's like going to the library, so you can concentrate better in the wintertime to a good fire and to a good smoke and to a good cup of coffee. And you can concentrate better. That kind of time for things, I think it's very unique.
Born in Baclabato, New Mexico, in the Carrizo Mountain Range, Arnold Clifford is a field botanist specializing in the flora and geology of the Lacolithic mountain ranges in the Southwest. He has been university trained in earth sciences and botany. Here, he talks about his early teachings of ecology by his elders.
We have an interaction between the holy people, earth service people, and the all the different types of animals and birds that are out there. And we got a song for each one of these animals, birds, the city, begin the halonko. When you think about it, some of these animals, some of these birds, they'll tell you how they act, you know, why the coyote got a black tip of the tail, and why the turkey has a white tip of the tail, and, you know, there's all these physical features on these animals that happen to them. And how they react with like other humans or other animals themselves. So the only way to understand, to truly understand these animals in that fashion, these old Dinesh, they might have studied these animals for a long time, you know, like the modern day biologists do, you know. The ecology that I learned was from my elders. They described in detail the soils, the setting, the geology, some of the plant association type details that are set that I know. So it was like microhabitats and then also like life zones and plant community types in a way, in an offbeat way.
Again, Gibson Ghani.
The blessing way is like the backbone of all the ceremonies. You know, no matter what ceremonies you do, after you're done with the ceremony, there has to be a blessing way. To live a good life, you know, for wisdom, knowledge, and all those sorts of things. The things that you learn and then the way you live. You pray for a new beginning. You pray for your kids. When a kid is about to be born, there's a blessing away that's being conducted. And then when a baby's born, then they have another blessing away. And then when a baby is old enough, talking and everything, then they have another blessing away for them. So it's a way of living. It's a way of growing. That's the way we're supposed to raise ourselves. Even in the words that we speak, you know, we try to be respectful of what we do. Some of these ceremonies are considered the root. Some of them are considered the legs, the hands, the arms, the body, the heart, the voice. Some is listening, some is thinking, some is way of seeing. So all this, all the things that you see on your body, that's the ceremony. You yourself is the ceremony. That's why when you look at picture glyphs, there's a man standing. You know, that's actually the ceremony itself. A lot of times you see a corn. That's the ceremony. The corn, your foundation, that's your root. And then when you grow, right in the center of the corn, that would be you. If you split it in half, that would be male and female, a man and a woman. You know, grows as this one big, like a backbone. The ears of the corn, that would be your children. And then when you peel off the corn husk, you see the kernels. That'll be your grandkids. So that's growth. That's why we use corn, white corn, yellow corn. We pray with, we sing with, and then at the same time, it's our food. You know, what you pray with is also your food. So that's the blessing way.
The late Leo Nat'ani was a respected Navajo elder and former member of the Navajo Tribal Council. He was dedicated to preserving traditional Navajo history and cultural values, such as herding of the sacred Churro sheep. Here he describes how sheep herding vitalizes traditional Navajo culture.
I'm a shepherd. I started herding sheep when I was big enough to walk, I guess. We had to count our sheep before we brought them back. And that's the first thing that we were taught. Make sure that you bring all of them back, even though we were playing half of the time. But we made sure we counted every one of them before we brought them home. Our parents were angry with us because we had to go back and hunt up the ones that were missing. Being a sheep herder is the same as raising your own family because they're your kids. If you look into the eyes of those sheep to butcher one of them, it's really hard for you to pick up one that you can eat and use as a food. Because they look at you just the same way that your kids look at you, and you treat them the same way. But I guess our Creator put them there for a reason, because we use them for our food, we use them for our bedding. We use them if we're in need of financial assistance. They're there for a reason because she uses them for her weaving. Weaving is part of our culture, a very important part of our culture. So that's all interrelated in some way.
Sarah Nat'ani, the wife of Leo, is a renowned and accomplished weaver and teacher of traditional Navajo weaving methods. Here she talks about the inspiration for her weaving patterns.
Weaving, it's part of the culture. If you're a troubled person, if you sit down to your weaving, your bad feeling all goes away and the good one comes in. And then you start thinking about your pattern, and then the wool is really good when you have a real fine and very good wool to work with. It really builds up your design and everything.
The daughter of Sarah and Leo, Tatnaba Nat'ani has taken on the tradition of sheep herding and weaving. Here, she tells of the major investment that raising sheep requires.
If I can produce wool from our sheep by taking really good care of them, they can produce quality wool. If I don't put effort into that, if I don't do rotational grazing, and if I don't allow our sheep to eat different forage, and if I don't get involved with their genetics, changing the ram every 3 years, 4 years, if I don't care for them, it will affect the quality of the wool. It'll affect my finances because I use part of the wool, not all of the wool. And it also will affect my family's health because we eat the sheep. And our sheep are organic. We don't give them shots. We don't bathe them in chemicals. They don't have bugs. They're really good. They're clean sheep. So it would affect my work financially. It would affect me spiritually because I have a connection with my weaving. And part of my weaving spectrum involves the sheep. It involves the climate, involves the tradition. The culture. I get great satisfaction by shearing beautiful sheep and just touching the wool and shearing with a hand shear and basking in the lanolin, cleaning the wool and then working with the wool after it's clean and weaving with the wool. All that I get great satisfaction. If I can take care of myself spiritually by raising healthy sheep and it makes me feel really good, then I can be a better parent, a better mother, I can be a better wife, and I can be a better person in general, and I can better take care of my family and the sheep.
Arnold Clifford discusses the fluctuation of climate from an ecological standpoint.
But it's hard to say if it's if we're actually contributing to it as human beings. If you study geology in terms of geology, it might be something that's cyclical, but it's all like long terms, something that happens every 15, 20,000 years. Major changes. And you see that, in the geologic record, Durango area, it's all mountain glaciers along there, like in Durango. That whole valley, Animas Valley, there was a huge glacier that came on down to the very northern part of Durango. The whole town of Durango is built on glacial outwashes. There's a glacial till at the very end of that glacier that pushed all that gravel to pushing along. That's what Durango is built on. And they say it happened like 6 or 7 times on there. The last time it happened was like 8,000 years ago. When that happened, all those high mountain plants, they got no place to go because there's no place for them to flower out anymore. So a lot of them, they start migrating southward. Yeah. And when you study vegetation like the Chuscas, the Shinigia, there's like about 12 to 15 species on top of the Chusca Mountains that you only find like above 11,500, 12,000 to 14,000 feet high alpine. And here you are, you find them in the Chusca Mountains like 9,400 to 9,800 feet. Yeah. And that tells you in the past, that there was an extended cooling period in some of these plants that got left behind there. Once it started warming back up, they got left behind. They adapted to the top of the Chuscas. And the only other nearest relative right now is way up high in the San Juan Mountains or like the Rockies. And then on the southern part of the Mount Ohananeta, when you get down like south of Tehachapi, there's a place called Cavazos Canyon there. You get these species that are more warm-loving, that you normally find in like the Sonoran and the Chihuahuan Desert. But somehow they made it up to the southern part of the Chuscas. Maybe there was a long extended warming period where it made it up that far. And then it started cooling back off, and a lot of the major plant community, they migrated southward, and then these are the ones that got left behind there, So that's how you can study vegetation too, you know, as well. That's how I figured it out. Like long term climate change is like fluctuates, you know.
There's a global destruction happening. The amount of trash the human race uses everywhere is tremendous, and that is affecting every community on Earth, every community. And so today, people that want to live, try to live in the traditional ways of their ancestors did, they can get a glimpse of that lifestyle, but with a lot of hardships. Like for us, we have to supplement our sheep. So every year we're spending about $5,000. That's just beginning on our sheep, taking them to different grazing areas, transporting them, having hired help. The whole global community is affecting us here. That's what I think. I don't think a long time ago, I think there was a lot of families that did sheep raising around here and were successful with it, that they didn't have to use money out of their pocket because there was forage here. The air was cleaner. There was, everything was better. And today, it's not like that. We're affected by what the global communities are doing.
People I know love to raise sheep. They still love to weave. They still love to silversmith. They still love to do things that their forefathers did. And they still believe in the traditional ways. And we still like to live according to what is natural for us. And we still hope. We still pray with our corn pollen, or white corn, or yellow corn. We still stand out there in the dawn of the morning, and we still pray for these good things that our forefathers and their forefathers did. And we will still continue to do that, because that's what it's all about, is having that good day. If we could just have a good day today, we know we can get out there in the morning again and do it again. So it's our life. It's the way of life. It's not just the type of work that we're talking about. It's the way of life. It's who we are. It's the language. It's the spirituality. It's the essence of a human struggle. You know, it's very sad to see something like this just kind of fade.
You know, it saddens me to say this, but our earth is in disarray because we as children are in disarray. We don't value recycling. It seems that we value the wrong things, being greedy. The person with the most toys is just the best. That's kind of the mentality. And that mentality infects us as the children of Mother Earth. And then we do things in our everyday life that destroys, that puts her down, but puts the Mother Earth down. So it's hard for our nature to become healed, to get back on track. It would take tremendous changes in our lives, our practices as human people, not only here on Navajo Nation, but in Japan, and on the island of Guam, and in D.C., Washington, D.C., and in Barrow, Alaska, the island of Hainan in China. Everybody, as a mother, if mama's not happy, the home isn't happy. And that's how the earth is. Our mama, the Mother Earth, I can't even say it. It's, you know, it's too tremendous to say. It's too disheartening to say that the earth is in, there's a very big imbalance, and just, you know, shame on us as people, as a whole people.
Roy Cady speaks of the delicate balance of embracing a modern lifestyle without losing one's sense of tradition.
The application of you know, some of the traditional teachings and the traditional way of life, applying that, you know, to your life in a balanced manner, and then including the modern way of life, the outside world way of life, just including the bits that fit together in a more balanced manner is what I'm referring to. Sometimes I get miscommunicated. Sometimes they say things like, you can't bring the old ways back. I'm not doing that. All I'm doing is I'm bringing with me in my life some of the tools that work for me. Those were the teachings that were given to me by my grandparents and my mother. And I accept them in my life today because they work for me. The balance of that way of life, you know, it attracts me. And I accept it, and it's truly created a harmonious atmosphere for me, and that's why I stand by them, and that's why I share with the world that this is the balance, and sheep is the balance in my life. If I didn't have sheep, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, nor would I have had the opportunity to see all the beautiful people in my community. The youth and the elders and every single one of them, I would not have that opportunity to be with them, to try to convince them that we can do this together.
The Navajo spiritual practice is based on restoring health, balance, and harmony within oneself. Leo Nat'ani long served as the peacekeeper liaison for the Shiprock Judicial District Court. Here he shares his thoughts on peace and harmony.
Peace and harmony is greeting other people. Peace and harmony is saying hello to somebody that you meet. Peace and harmony is respecting an elderly person. Peace and harmony means you're helping a small child. Peace and harmony means that you're able to assist whoever is in need, regardless of the color of their skin, their clans. If we can get the meaning of peace and harmony to everybody in this world, we wouldn't have any problem. Peace and harmony is being able to help somebody. Peace and harmony is being able to know where you are and in which direction you're going. Peace and harmony is being in balance with the world.
On this episode of Watersheds as Commons, we have heard the voices of Arnold Clifford, Al Largo, Gibson Ghani, Roy Cady, and Sarah Leo and Tatnaba Nat'ani. Theme music was performed by Heather Begay. Production of Watersheds as Commons is funded by the Christensen Fund and the New Mexico Humanities Council and was produced in the studios of the Loeffler Oral History Archive. For free access to other Lore of the Land programming, please visit our website at www.loreoftheland.org. For the Lore of the Land, this is Celestia Loeffler. Thank you for listening. Neya, neya, oh, neya.